The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to Curious with Josh Peck. Start the show.
Welcome back to the Curious Podcast. My name is Josh Peck, and I am your host, and your name is Listener, and that's what you do. You listen. On today's show, Kim Petras. Kim is a pop star. She's a brilliant songwriter, artist, and she's my friend. I like having famous friends. I enjoy it, especially people like Kim, who I knew before, like pre-fame, which in theory endears me more to her. And because I knew her before, listen, the reality is when people are famous and you meet them post-fame, like once they've, you know, like they've leveled up to the big boss mode, it's a very small chance that you will ever have any version of a relationship with them. And you'll want to, and so will they. It just won't be possible. Because while you're going to your job at H&R Block, they're in Barbados with Richard Branson going kite surfing. And that's just not for us CPAs who work at H&R Block doing God's work. I did a movie with Chris Hemsworth 10 years ago. Before he did Thor, we had a great time. He's a mensch, a beauty, a sweetheart of a guy. And I have no doubt that nothing has changed, but the reality is we don't talk. I mean, we talk. No, we don't. But we would, in theory. Nothing's changed except he's gotten absurdly, ridiculously, over the top, unfairly famous. No. I'm kidding. If anyone deserves it, it's him. He's a beauty. But, you know, he's busy being famous. And I'm busy doing a very middling podcast that some, many, a few, more than a dozen people like. And for that, I can sleep easy at night. In fact, knowing that a good handful of salt-of-the-earth people listen to this podcast, well, that's my emotional Ambien. It puts me to sleep at night in a way that no pharmaceutical could, except Valium. Valium is an incredible drug. It works well, quick, it's clean, nice, limited hangover. But other than Valium, it's you guys. But I met Kim when she first moved to the States, and she was working with a good buddy of mine, CJ Abraham. And, you know, I talk about it on the pod, but you know, CJ was like, you got to check out Kim. Like, she's pretty, something special. And I had met a couple artists that CJ had worked with. And they failed to blow my mind. And then all of a sudden, Kim played her music. And I was like, oh, shit. Oh, you about to be famous, famous. I hope you remember me. Because you're not going to, yeah, we're not going to be hanging out in CJ's garage studio much longer. Because you're going to be at Chance the Rapper studio. And also, who are the famous people? And also, you know, you're going to be performing live from Little Uzi Vert's studio soon. So, you know, I don't know. Are those famous people? Anyway, she's going to be performing with the best of the best, and she already is. She was recently on Jimmy Kimmel Live. She is just crushing it. And I can't wait to share this interview with her. You know, she's also an incredible advocate for the transgender community, and she has shared her story about sort of what her incredible life, what she's been through, and what it took to get her here to this special moment. So I hope you guys enjoy this. Here's Kim Petras. So, can I tell you, I probably would have never had the chance to tell you what my first impression or the first thing I remember saying about you was when we met.
Yeah.
Because you and I have a mutual friend.
We do.
Super Chris Abraham.
Yes. Shout out Super Chris Abraham.
God bless him. The best.
I know. The absolute best person there is.
And you had sort of newly moved to LA. I think it was like 2014, 2015.
Yeah.
And you know, Super Chris is one of those spectacular people who, like, he just loves finding new talent.
Yeah.
And he loves getting excited about that. And
yeah,
that's sort of a double-edged sword, because there were many people that CJ had worked with where I was like, CJ, this ain't it.
Yeah, yeah, but, yeah, of course.
You don't have the heart to say that.
Yeah.
But you're like, I'm not quite sure this is going to come together. And yeah. Then I remember meeting you and you were so lovely. And then
thank you.
And then he played back me some you. Of your music. And I just remember thinking, like, finally, CJ got a winner.
Oh my God, yay! thank you. Oh, that's so sweet.
You know?
I mean, I love the dude. I mean, he let me, like, live in his garage and shit like that. You know, like, it's just, like, cool when, like, somebody believes in you and is excited about you. Like, it was so awesome. And, like, that, like, I didn't know much about, like, the whole, like, CJ universe and, like, you guys. And obviously, like, I watched, like, all the shows that he's been a part of and loved them. But I didn't quite know. And then, like, it kind of just, like, dunked me into, like, his crazy universe. And it's, like, really amazing. I hope one day there's, like, a documentary or something about, you know, about him. Like,
oh, he's there so, will
such
be.
A, like,
he'll be a
character.
Billionaire.
Yeah.
And I'll probably be working for him.
I mean, yes.
Yes.
Same. For sure.
I just, but it is such a fun, I wonder for you, and you tell me, like, I guess because you live it every day, mm-hmm. it's sort of like, it doesn't feel as fast to what it seems for me to have watched your ascension, right?
Aww.
Like, yesterday we were in his garage and you were just like this talented new performer, and now it feels like the world knows your greatness.
Thanks.
Does it feel that way? Does it feel fast, or does it feel like, no, I've been waiting for this my whole life?
It does feel like both a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I feel like it's definitely been like quite a long journey just for me emotionally. You know, like,
yeah.
I've been working on this like since I was like 13 or something, you know, writing a song like every day, like making that goal. And like, I feel like I got good like around 2014, like around that time when you met me. Like, that's when I started like finding my own thing and finally like writing with people instead of just like in my bedroom and stuff like that. And yeah, but just the lead up time was so long. And then in the last like 3 years, kind of everything went down.
Yeah.
And yeah, but I do feel like I've kind of built it like step by step. Like, it wasn't like a, you know, I don't have like a number one hit or anything like that. Like, I didn't like, you know, not know like overnight success. I kind of just built on top of each other and kind of took it step by step, you know, and like grew my tours and grew my fan base. And I think just started like learning about like the industry and stuff like that. So for me, it just feels like a step by step thing.
Yeah.
But it's cool that you feel that way. Like, that's really awesome. But yeah, I'm so happy with where I'm at. And I'm, you know, every time I like, you know, when I used to be able to go on tour, every time I would look in the crowd, I would be like, holy shit, I can't believe this many people would come and see me or even know about me or anything like that, you know? So it does feel really cool in those moments.
It's an interesting thing, right? Because talented people take that leap, which is really, I mean, you have to be like bordering on mentally ill to
yeah.
believe that, like, no, 20,000 people will want to buy tickets to me.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's a wild risk.
Yeah.
And yet, and then, but there are plenty of people who think that are out of their mind wrong, right?
Yeah, of course.
That'll never get there. And then to have that validated and to be like, I was right. Like, I knew it. That little voice told me to do this and I did it. That's got to
yeah.
be an insane feeling.
Yeah, totally. It's just I a lot of the times feel like I'm like one of those like crazy people and I'm like, fuck, like I still feel like I
yeah.
am. You
am
know?
I
like,
an imposter?
I don't think anything's ever going to like fix that. Like, I'm always going to like, there's always going to be a part of me that's just like, you know, that does not realize that. And that feels like somebody who believes in some ridiculous shit and is, you know, just, yeah, I don't know. Because like so much of this is like fighting for like your vision and like doing it exactly as you want. And then people immediately think you're nuts, you know, because it's like, no, this has to be this way. And I want to sing it this way. And no, this angle is wrong. Or no, this lyric sucks. Or, you know, people, yeah, it's just like, it's still very much just, I'm always just trying to make another vision, like exactly the way that I see it, or exactly the way that I want it, or exactly the way that I wanted to do it as a kid, or just like some random thing. And like, I still feel crazy, and I feel like that's a part of it. And that's just something that, like, I think people who are in it and in any way talented or artistic or anything like that, they always feel like they're, you know, like, am I fucking nuts? And yeah, I don't think you stop, but
when
maybe I'm not, maybe I am, but
you're probably,
it's kind of cool not to know. I feel like
you're teetering.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I also feel like if you knew, you wouldn't be like a good artist, you know, so you kind of don't want to know if you're nuts, and you kind of don't want to fix everything about you, or yeah, it's weird being an artist, but it's amazing.
What's the other side of that? So like if dipping your toe into the crazy aids you in your artistry, is it also, when you're not doing your art, annoying? Or does it like get to you to have so much going on in your head?
Sure. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like sometimes I stand in my own way, like everybody does. And I often feel like when it's just like, when I'm like asking everybody, like, is this too ridiculous? Like, is this concept like too crazy or like too extreme or too basic? Or, you know, it can go anywhere. I can feel like all these like spectrums of things about like what I make.
Yeah.
And I feel like most of the time it's just when I like blindly believe that it's somehow good, even if some people are like, like, really, you're going to stack like 100 fucking harmonies on this shit and like make it huge and stuff like that. You know, it's mostly when I think I, you know, I take risks like that, that people really like it and that my fans really like it. So it's weird. But yeah, I stand in my own way. Sometimes I'm like, no, it's like to this. And then I do like, you know, and then I make it more basic and then I hate it. And then it's a spiral, you know? So,
yeah, I've heard Kanye talk about like, it, or there's this great Thelonious Monk quote of like, the greatest artist is the one who is most like himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds, and Kanye echoed that too, was like, I think my superpower is how much I'm not influenced.
Mm-hmm.
Like it, I really don't care about other people's opinions. I'm very much self-driven with my vision. Do you echo that?
Yeah, it's hard though. I feel like it's really hard not to listen to other people's opinions. I think especially in anybody's like beginning phase. And I think that can sometimes like drive you in like a wrong direction and something like you don't want to do. And some people who get like successful with something that somebody told them to do get really unhappy because they're like, oh, fuck, I listened to this person and it worked, but it was never what I wanted to do, you know, and then I try to change it or stuff like that. Or,
who are people like that? Like boy bands, like manufactured kind of?
I don't know,
of,
probably.
Right.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I can just like, I know from like, you know, great like songwriter friends who just listen too much to like their friends or listen too much to like and other people's input. And like, I think the best advice is to like listen to yourself and have your own vision. And like, just nobody can do it for you, you know, if you really want to do something and prove something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think it's really, really hard in the beginning of a career to not go with what like somebody who's had a success or something tells you. You know, you're like, oh, you're probably right because like you've had a hit, or you know, just like stupid shit like that. And that's not true. Like, it's never true. Like, what's right is what you feel is right. And that's something that's like some confidence you got to like build. And and that's super hard. And I think that takes like strength. And that's why a lot of the artists I think I really resonate with and I really like are necessarily the most like mainstream successful ones, like because they don't necessarily care and they just make what they want to make. And that's up to other people to define if that's great. To some people, if something's a mainstream success, that means it's great. That means it's great music and
validated by the masses.
Totally. And the other stuff is just like artsy music that doesn't matter. And to other people, it's like if something's a mainstream success, it automatically sucks because like a large group of people loves it and you don't want to be a part of like a large group of people. You want to be different, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like there's different sides to shit, and that's like defined by anybody themselves, you know?
So is your music always an audience of for an audience of one first, or are you ever trying to make something that you think the people will want in that moment?
I have done that. I think I've written songs that I was like, oh, like large, like the general public will like this.
How does that go?
You know, or like, yeah, just like, and that usually sucks. You right. know, I'm like, or somebody's like, this is something that like straight girls will like, or, you know, just like all these people have like these like definitions of what like a song has to be. And like whenever I try to do something or for like other artists or for myself that was like, you know, this is going to be like, I'm going to like, you know, just make something that I think everybody will like. It's been like the most vanilla shit ever. And I hate it, you know, like, and I look back at it and I'm like, why did I ever want to write anything like that? So yeah, I think that's like a bad idea in general to want to
so tempting
and totally
isn't
yeah.
it?
No, for sure, it's super super tempting. And there's some people who have it down. Like there's some people who have figured out what's going on right now and what people want to say right now and how people want to talk right now and what people want to say. I think there's definitely like a lot of writers who are super talented and great at that. It's just something that I don't like to think that way and that I don't think is like my strength. Yes. I think whenever I do that, I kind of suck and I kind of, you know, blend in with stuff because like that's the goal, you know, to like blend in and sound like other things that are out there, sound like things that you think other people might like, but you don't actually like. So yeah, I've kind of gotten over that and I've kind of just, I've learned a lot, I think, what my fan base likes because I know them pretty well now. Like I've done like a ton of tours last year. Like I did like 6 tours or something last year.
Wow.
Alone. And like the year before, no, last year I started touring, like 2019 I started touring. And yeah, I feel like I've learned just like a ton about my fans and they're like a very specific group of people who just really feel really free and at my concerts and go really wild. And I don't know any other fan base like it. And that makes me really, really proud because I think they're very unique. They're very like different, you know, that they remind me of me. Just a lot of super pop stans. And I used to be like a Twitter stan and stuff like that and be really into that. And I feel in a lot of ways like I used to be them. So yeah, now I sometimes write with like my fans in mind or just like having, you know, my fans write me like a lot of stuff. Like I text with my fans, they write me their stories and their life and what they're going through. And I think that can definitely like bleed into my music and what I want to write about. Just like with friends, you know, when you have a conversation with a friend and you're like, oh, that makes a great song or that makes a great concept or... You know, when somebody just talks about their raw emotions or what they're going through. So I think that influences my music. But at the base of it, I'm making music for myself and for I'm making what I want to make and what I want to hear and what I think should be out there. And what I like and what makes me like dance or makes me smile or makes me feel like I can relate to the song.
Do you notice like with something like Malibu or your songs like the you know the super hits you know you hear about like you hear Billy Joel talk about how he wrote New York State of Mind in like 15 minutes. He was driving mm-hmm. home on the Greyhound bus on the Hudson River line in New York and he's like, wow. I'm on a Greyhound bus on the Hudson River line, I'm in a New York State of Mind, I should write that.
Yeah,
and then
amazing.
20 minutes later, it's one of his greatest songs ever.
The dream.
Is there like is there a weird certain ease to when it's just right?
Yeah for sure.
Like you can't reverse engineer it. It just lines up correctly when you're writing something like that.
Yes, there is magical moments like that just happen like that. But there's also just brain numbing, difficult, problematic ass crossword puzzle ass songs that just you know are gonna be great, but you just can't quite do it. That can take like days and days, and now. Worth it. Like I've definitely like stuck through some really difficult songs. Like I think my like biggest song is Hard to Break still, and that one took like a month or something to write. Like, we were like daily focusing on every single word and such a simple lyric. Like, it's embarrassing, honestly, how long it took us. But it was just, it needed to be like just right. And like, nothing was just like hitting right. And we knew the potential of the song and like how good the melody was, because the melody came like first before any words. Mm. And then we kind of went back in and crossword puzzled it, and it paid off in that one. In other ones, like, you do it again and again and again, and you're like, fuck, it's just not as good. And like, maybe there was even like a mistake. Like, sometimes there's like grammatical, like, or just like incorrect ways of saying stuff, and they just sound so much better, and you just can't, like, you try and fix it again and again, and it just doesn't sound as good. Like, that's definitely happening all the time. And it's a curse sometimes, because like, you don't want it to be the, like, you know, incorrect, or it just like came out of you in a freestyle, but it just sounds cooler than anything else you can do.
But you know that that you're going to get tweeted when that song comes out.
Yeah.
Like, Kim, this actually doesn't make sense.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
But does it sound dope as shit? Like, you're killing me here.
I completely, like, I now try to not think about that even a little bit. Like, I just, whatever I think is like the coolest shit I can possibly make, I make, and I try not to care. And I think that's the ultimate goal of like being zen. You know, like, zen goals is just like, I make what I think is really dope. And if people think any kind of thing about it, it doesn't matter. Like, I think this is the coolest shit, and I fully believe in it. And I, you know, and this is exactly what I wanted to hear. And yeah, like, that's the goal. Just like having the confidence to like stand behind something, and I admire that about people too, you know, when people are like, there's the Ariana song that's like, what does she say in it, like, Max Martin wrote it, and it's Break Free, and it's like, who I really are now that I've become who I really are. Like, it sounds so much cooler, but it's so wrong. And they knew it. But they were like, this sounds cooler, so we're going to sing Who I Really Are. And it just is better than Who I Really Am. And I admire, like, I think that's like confidence. Like, confidence to be stupid in pop is so important. Like, the confidence to just do things because they're catchy and they sound cool, and people might think they're the stupidest shit in the world, but to run with it, like, that's so brave and like amazing to me. So I love stuff like that.
But you bring up a great point with Ariana, who, you know, we come from the same, you know, the Nickelodeon family. And I mean, I got to watch, similar to you in certain respects, but like Ariana truly at the beginning of her career. And that girl was confident. Even
amazing.
When she was 15. And by the way, she deserved to be, because like, she would walk around her house when they would have parties at their house, and you would hear like this incredible voice coming through the hallways. And she was just like, she was like, oh, I have this riff stuck in my head and I can't stop singing until it's out.
Yeah.
And I was like, cool, please don't
That's
stop.
Dope. Yeah.
But there's a great old saying, which is like, a comedian gets on stage and says, get ready, because you're going to laugh. You'll probably laugh at what I'm saying, but even if you laugh at me, just laugh. And a rock star gets on stage and goes, stare at me, because I'm about to fucking knock your socks off.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, to what you're saying, and same thing with Ariana, like, it takes a certain level of confidence to be able to walk out there and be like, I'm about to entertain you for 90 minutes, so strap up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think being a comedian is some of the craziest shit ever, especially people who just come up with stuff like at the spot and like really go out there and do that. Like, I watch a bunch of stuff about comedians, and it's like if I didn't sing, if I had to talk, I would fucking die. Like, I can't, like, talking is like one of my weak points in life. It's like when I feel really awkward, like, I can like stage talk and be like, thank you and shit like that.
Yeah,
but
you know what'll get a,
yeah, but
get
a
rise.
I admire that so, so much. Just like, I really do. But yeah, there's something like, I don't feel like I'm in life, I'm a very confident person in general. Like, I'm very like self-doubting and stuff like that, and insecure, and you know, I just like me. But when I go on stage, like, that's I it's like a switch and I turn super, super confident. And same in the vocal booth. Like, it's just like, that's what singing has always been to me. It's been like a escape and like a super character of myself, or like a super version of myself that I can turn on and kind of disappear into. And like, it just... I like stop thinking, my brain stops overthinking everything, and I just like turn like a switch, and it's really, really cool. And yeah, so I think that's always been like my way to like escape life or insecurities or feeling, you know, any kind of way. It's always been just like building this, confident version of myself that I can be on a stage or when I'm performing or when I sing in any way.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
How early can you track? And maybe it was, you know, like when you were a kid growing up in Germany, like how early can you track the need to escape?
I think like super early, like 5, like 6. I felt always like just really into, like I was always really into costumes. I was always really into makeup. I was always really into like singers, like musicals, any kind of music I was obsessed with. My mom was really into like Cher and like Liza Minnelli and like Frank Sinatra and just like the like great like old not calling anybody old, but
older.
Just, yeah, older. Just
the
like
classics.
The classics, like the great people,
yes.
I guess. And yeah, that's just what I used to like watch all day as a kid and like escape into. And you know, I like sew little outfits that I thought were awesome and they sucked, but I like ran around my garden with them and like, you know, I don't know, acted like I was on a stage. So it's just been always been like a thing for me that I've just loved really, really passionately since I can like remember.
Was it also escape? Like, was it sort of like for many of us growing up, was it kind of wonderfully mundane? Like here was this fabulous alternative to what was just kind of like a classic suburban life.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I think my mom always just like was kind of that crazy person in my life who just always believed, you know, that you can be whatever you want to be and was always kind of a little greater than life. Like my mom is just like, you know, always like makeup, always like puts on a look, like always... she had like a dance studio. She would do like these annual like dance shows and stuff like that. And they would have like the costumes like in our basement. It was like giant like skirts. And then it would like get lifted up and it would be like, you know, the J-Lo thing that she did with like the giant skirt and stuff like that. And we just had stuff like that, like in our basement or like dragon heads or like, you know, just things like that. So I just feel like that like fueled me as a kid to just like imagine stuff and to to just want to, you know, create an alternate reality. And and I feel like that's just always been my passion. And yes, I've been like super bored of my like neighborhood and like neighborhood kids and stuff like that really early on. Like I never really did any of that. Like I was like always either like singing in my house or dancing or doing some kind of thing that didn't really involve other kids. I was like really antisocial and really like just like everybody thought it was really weird. So so I guess like from that as well, I just wanted to not deal with that and just make up something cooler than that.
I wonder, was it also in an effort to like, because here you are, you're young, you're growing up in Germany, and you're probably feeling all these things that are starting to spark up inside of you. And also there's this other part where it's like, if I focus on this wonderful fantasy world, maybe I don't have to deal with this other stuff that's coming up for me. Was that a thing?
Yeah, 1,000,000%. I mean, I very early on also just like experienced like extreme like sadness and extreme like, you know, hating myself and self-deprecation and stuff like that. And being transgender and not liking the body you're in, and then realizing you're going to go through puberty at some point, or like feeling stuck in your body. That was like a thing for me as long as I can remember. Like as long as I can remember, I felt, like when I like found out basically about like gender roles and like what gender means and stuff like that, and it's not reversible. I was really suicidal at like 10. Like, so it was, it was kind of dark. And I was so lucky to have parents who were really supportive and who were like, at home, you can be whoever you want to be. But then like going to doctors and stuff like that, like first thing, obviously I didn't go to like good doctors or anything, but first thing was like, yeah, your kid is crazy, and like shave your kid's hair off and try as a boy and like put on boy clothes. But like none of that changed anything. Like I did all of that stuff and it didn't change anything. And it was just like, yeah, it was for sure just like a grim little like reality that I was, you know, gonna have to like go through stuff, and that I was very uncertain if I was gonna get to transition. And if I was going to have to go through, you know, puberty.
Because that's a pretty defining point, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's, just if you, you know, it's irreversible stuff. Like, and I was like, I always loved singing. So I was like, what if my voice drops? So every morning I like got up really scared of like my voice dropping.
Wow.
And because like I love my voice, you know, and I didn't want to have like a really deep voice. And so that was like, since I was a kid, every day I was really scared of that. And every morning was like panic and being scared and like crying and all that dramatic stuff. So yes, I think definitely that all the stuff of like making an alternate reality and like finding reality boring also had to do with like reality being kind of shitty for me, you know, or feeling shitty, even though it wasn't. I know now there's a lot of worse cases and could have gone a lot of, you know, could have been a lot worse. And I feel very lucky now that I like look back at it. But I definitely feel like that's a part of it.
When you say like you weren't sure whether you would be able to or allowed to transition, was that just because obviously your parents were so supportive? Was it finding a doctor who would do it? Was it the legality in Germany? Like, what was that like?
Yeah, it was finding the doctor to do it. We would like drive all around Germany to like find any doctor at any knowledge. It was really, really hard. I mean, it was like 11 years ago or something. Like I started hormone therapy at like 11 or 12. So that's a while ago.
Yeah.
It was really hard. And we like eventually like found somebody in like Hamburg, you know. It was just like, and there's, you know, I was like an hour outside of Cologne, like really tiny, tiny village, like cows, like nothing. And I hated it so, so much. We like drove all around for like, I think 2 years or something until we found somebody who was like, yeah, there's a thing called hormone therapy that we can actually do, and that we can do as early as now. And and then I started hormone therapy at like 12. Yeah. And that was such a relief in my life. And like everything changed. And I like really like became a much happier person and a much more positive person. And I felt like that was when like my life started. And I started having friends, and I started having, you know, I don't know, having people over and stuff like that. Before, that was always like something I would never do. And I didn't want people to really to get to know me because I felt like I was in the wrong gender and I didn't want anybody to know that person, you know? So I wanted to, once I got like the hormone therapy, I opened up as a person and I started making friends and just like normal things like that.
My friend Fallon, who I've had on the podcast, who mm-hmm. I knew when she was a man named Tony, and mm-hmm. she transitioned, and she talked about the moment that she first took estrogen mm-hmm. and the power of hormones. And when yeah. you're a woman and you finally get that wave of female hormone, she was like, it was earth shattering. It just completely changed. Like, I finally felt comfortable for the first time. Like, it must have been yeah. insane to get that first hit of hormone. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was just really, I mean, nothing changes. Like, that's the funny thing. Like, it's just like, it's a gradual thing, you know, it's, but just that, you know, you just took it is the amazing part of it, yeah. I think. Like, and yeah, it changed for sure. It like changed my whole life, and I felt like I was on the right track, and I wasn't anxious anymore as much as I was before. I feel like anxiety is something I like carry with me anywhere. Like, I'm a very anxious person, but yeah, that was just when I started like being a person. So it was a very, very powerful, amazing moment for me.
Was there ever a fear? Like, it seems as though, and it's crazy to say this even in this day and age, that like someone like Frank Ocean or Lil Nas X, like, were revered for being so comfortable to come out at the beginning of their career. Mm-hmm. Because I guess, and I didn't observe this, but some people said it's just going to make it a much tougher road.
Yeah.
Because for whatever reasons, like, was there ever a thought of like, this might make me being a public person and a public performer harder, or invite, you know, just more challenge?
Yeah, not really for like me personally. I always felt like I feel very proud of being trans, and I never wanted to hide anything off that. And yeah, I just always kind of felt proud and confident about it. And whenever somebody would come up to me and talk to me about it, I would gladly talk about it. And I just don't feel any shame in being transgender. And my mom like really taught me that, I think, just to not be ashamed of it ever. But yeah, people in general were like, are you sure you don't want to like hide it and like save it for like a magical like reveal, you know, just like, or some like shit, you know? And I think just that's so stupid. You know, a lot of people in music were like, let's calculate this out and let's make this like a stunt and make it a gimmick. And I hate that so much.
Oh,
and
I hate it too.
Yeah. So it was more like in music industry people, you know, and like, I got asked in like a really like really big like publishing company's meeting, like, so are you transgender because it's trendy right now? And like,
no.
It was so offensive. And it was this like super successful woman in music, like, and yeah, I just like busted that one out. And it was so, you know, it was just like, it was some crazy experiences just with people in the music industry and their opinions on it. And I never asked for anybody's opinion on it. And like, I mean, CJ was there for all of it, so CJ knows all about it. Yeah, it was crazy because then all everybody would talk about was, there's this trans girl who makes music. And it's just like, ugh, like,
right,
so annoying. Like, don't you want to like, it was very hard to be taken as anything else but the trans girl that's kind of good, you know? Like,
does that annoy you ever with like that? Maybe you feel as though that walks in the room before you?
It did so hard. Yeah, it did in the beginning of my career so hard. I just wanted it to kind of to downplay it. I turned down a bunch of interviews of like being about being transgender. And I was like, fuck that. I've talked about that because I used to do documentaries and stuff when I was like 13, 14 in Germany. And it was like really just educational shit. I would just like talk about the experience of being transgender.
Young
with my
Kim Petras of Cologne, Germany.
I know, pop star and medical sensation. Yeah, that's just awful. yeah, it sucked. So when I came here and I kind of had a clean slate, I just thought like, yeah, I thought of it as something that I don't want to do again. And I thought of it as something that's going to be gimmicky and that people are going to like use or try to use. And so I never really spoke about it. And I worked with everybody and their mom, and nobody ever had a problem with it. And some people found out later, and like the music makers have been so amazing about it. Like, I've done like a lot of hip hop sessions where you should think like it would be scary or it would be weird to be transgender, and none of that. Like, they've always just been like, that's super dope, I love that, let's make another song. You know, like, I feel like with the creators, it's been great. But then once like press started being a thing, it started becoming all about that. And I feel it felt really gimmicky about it, and I didn't want like the trans community to think I'm like using it in any way or making it like a gimmick or anything. Like, I just wanted to be like seen as any other artist, you know. And that also means like getting judged, like against like, hey, how is this song like against like a Lady Gaga song or like any woman song, you know, not Lady Gaga, but you know what I mean?
Sure, like, yeah, just another like female pop
woman
star.
Like, I was just always category like queer LGBTQ artist and never mentioned in the same sentence as, you know, anybody who's not gay or who's not trans or who's not. So that was just something, like, I love the gay community, I love the LGBTQ community, I'm not ashamed of that. But I was just like, I want to be judged as, you know, as a musician and as a talented person and as a songwriter. And there's never anything about that in any of these articles. And it's just always like, you know, it's just trans stuff. And so in the beginning, it really bugged me. And then I kind of realized the just significance I have to the trans community now, and that got me. And so that kind of just changed my whole view on it. And I think now I see it differently. I think it's really important for me to speak about it. I think it was kind of childish and just something that I, you know, had like bottled up for so long that I was just annoyed at anything that would mention me being trans. And I was just like, yo, I just want you to see how hard I worked on actually becoming a good songwriter, like, because that's right. What I'm proud of in life. And
and people just want some clickbait,
yeah,
hooky. I mean, yeah, on such a shallow level, like,
I
lost 100 pounds and I was on television fat, yeah, as fuck. And then I lost all this weight and it was like, I can't tell you. And still, I'm sure till I'm, I don't know, in my 50s, I'm sure, yeah, it'll be like somewhere in the article.
Yeah,
but for
course,
years, it was like former fatty turned,
oh my God,
turned
no,
heartthrob. I was like, fuck off.
So dark. I'm so sorry.
Let me live.
Yeah, that sucks.
But I get it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, but now I kind of just look at it and I'm like, it's still so important to just get the word transgender out there as a thing.
Yeah.
And it just kind of started in America with Caitlyn Jenner and all of that stuff and being on the cover of Vogue and, you know, and that was all like amazing, but it started so much earlier in reality. And like, there was like Marsha P. Johnson who like threw the first brick at Stonewall and like who we like owe pride to and like everything, you know, like the trans community goes back so, so far. And yeah, and it's just kind of now getting like the visibility. And I think that's just important to educate people about it. So like maybe someday it can be like in a, you know, a book in school that it's like, hey, transgender people exist, you know, just like a tiny chapter that's like, this exists and has existed.
Yeah.
Be cool with it, you know?
Yeah, recognize.
Or just like, yeah, so I feel like I'm a part of that. And now I just like, you know, I like to talk about it, and I think that's a part of change and changing the world, is talking about it. And I think I'm being given a really great platform, and I think I would waste it if I didn't talk about it. So that's kind of how I felt about it, and I've kind of turned my annoyance around, and I still sometimes get really, really annoyed with the same exact questions. And I there's definitely now like boundaries to me, you know, just stuff that I don't cross anymore. Like in the beginning, it would be like literal like questions about like surgeries or hormone therapy or stuff like that. And I just feel like I'm not the person to do that. But like talking about being a trans woman in the music industry I'll gladly do, and I don't have a problem with. And I don't want people to feel like scared to ask me anything about being transgender. You know, I want to be like, I still feel proud of it, but yes, I did. And sometimes still do feel really annoyed that people are like kind of limiting me to just being transgender instead of listening to my music and comparing it to whatever other artists or whatever other, you know, to, yeah, like pop music, you know?
I think that's natural. And I remember hearing from friends like Fallon and other friends in the trans community who, with the Caitlyn Jenner of it all, were like, we're so grateful that it's such a public moment mm-hmm. and entering, you know, really expanding the conversation.
Yeah.
And they said, what we wish was an added layer to this was that Caitlyn has such a specific life and has so much privilege and the money and the ability in which to do this.
Yes.
And for so many of us, it's not the case. And absolutely. It's so much harder.
Absolutely. And I mean, I was born and raised in Germany where there's health insurance. So I had a much easier time. I wasn't rich. I wasn't poor. I had my health insurance covered my transition, which is something incredible because my parents couldn't have afforded it.
Yeah.
And so I'm privileged in that way. And it's very crazy the way that it is for trans people in general in America and how hard it is to get any kind of treatment, how expensive it is, how much like violence there is. It's very sad and things need to change. And like all the time there's, you know, stuff like laws getting like reversed and people trying to take rights away and people trying to move things backwards. And it's just, it's sad. And that's why I feel like it's important I talk about it. Yeah. Even if I personally, sometimes I'm like, talk about my music. But that's why I feel like it's important for me to talk about it, bring visibility to it, and to be a proud member of it and to help bring awareness to it. Yeah.
I think I heard on another interview you did, was your first sort of introduction to loving pop music was a Max Martin documentary you were watching?
Yes.
So I got to ask this. I got to ask. Max Martin, genius songwriter, Swedish.
Yes.
It seems like a lot of these hit makers come from Sweden.
Yeah.
What's in the water in Sweden? Why are they so good at making hits?
I don't know.
What is it?
I don't know, but there's just so many great melodies coming from over there and like great singers and great anything, but
good pop and good electronic music.
Yeah, like amazing. I feel like it probably, it's just a guess. Like, yeah. I don't know. Germany is definitely not Sweden. Completely different vibe. In Germany, there's like Zed and that's like it. And like Rammstein. We're right. Like, cool, we're from Germany, you know, in music. I guess somebody told me who I wrote, used to write with a lot, this guy, Jones Wedderburg. He's really, really good.
And yeah, also CG's had,
like,
buddy.
Yeah, yeah. And he had, like, great melodies and all that stuff. And just, like, had it. And he was like, it's because it's dark so much in the winter and people are just inside and, like, in their feelings. And it's really, really cool because, you know, it's, like, dark for a half of the year or something.
Yeah, like,
and
then 18 like hours a day.
Yeah, like crazy. And he said it's just so depressing that people just go inside and write songs. And yeah, but also I guess just the crazy like history and like royal bloodline of pop with like Max Martin and I think Dennis Pop and ABBA and I Saw the Sign, Ace of Base. And,
Ace of Base, Swedish?
Yeah.
Wow. Listen, mid-90s.
I think Max wrote like, Max and like this guy Dennis Pop like wrote most of this Ace of Base stuff.
What?
So I think, or they took from it or something, but they all have something to do with each other and they're all kind of just like, yeah. They all just kind of happened after each other. So I think it all goes back to ABBA.
Yeah.
And it all goes back to ABBA being so successful. And I mean, they took part in the Eurovision Song Contest and won and then became this huge thing. And I mean, their music is still some of the most impressive, amazing pop music ever made to me. Like ABBA, like, is insane.
It's damn good.
Yeah, they're crazy. The like chords, melodies, they're nuts. And I think so much of modern pop is based off of ABBA. And yeah, I mean, if I was Swedish, I would study the shit out of ABBA and, you know, learn anything I can about that and then make it into my own and, you know, try to become a Max Martin. So I'm just like fascinated with him because I feel like he just like studied pop really well and like
but you've
figured out something cool.
Like you're a real, you've really broken down pop. Like you're,
thanks.
And you're, like you're proudly like I like almost as if it was an equation, right? Because pop of all music is slightly an equation.
Yes.
If you'd agree.
Yeah, totally.
So here's okay. So we're at the Kim Petras masterclass. You know that the masterclass you see on YouTube. So like you're teaching, you know, without giving away all your secrets, but like you're teaching a small class of songwriters. What are your like one or two tenets when it comes to pop music where you're like, you got to get this right first. This is the most important thing.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't anymore think there's rules to making music. I think now for me, it's more interesting to break some rules than to follow them. In the beginning, I was very obsessed.
But you got to know them, right?
Yeah, but you got to know them. I think that's a valid thing, that you got to know the rules in order to break them.
Yeah.
I think something a lot of people never think about is like the… you know, thinking about the different notes that you're on in the song and the different parts to set them apart. Like I think to the T in every single song, my pre is always lower than my chorus. So the chorus pops and like the first note, like never touch the first note of the chorus and always stay below that so that the chorus like jumps out at you.
Interesting.
So yeah, so you don't spoil the chorus, you know? Or be really high above it and then do like a lower thing on the chorus. But I almost always follow that. And then something people don't really think about. And this is also largely Aaron. Aaron's walking around. We're in this house together with my friend Alex. We're just writing songs every day. So it's cool that she came over. Also, like cadences. I like to make cadences different. In every part of the song and just think about like, okay, what cadence have you not explored and like try not to be in exactly the same pocket as the chorus in the pre or in the verse and try other rhythms or longer notes or, you know, if you go really short in the chorus, then you should have a part that probably has really long ones. So they you set them apart. Mm. I think it's all about like setting things apart. Just making them pop, making every part pop and work with each other really well. And that's something that I've definitely learned from Aaron and Luke and Kojak and even CJ and anybody I've worked with. It's been so interesting because I used to just write songs without ever thinking about a melody and, you know, just kind of just wrote what I felt. And that's like how I started. And now a lot of songs I write just going in, having no single word and just laying out like the skeleton and then later adding in words. Yeah. And I think that's something that I always just like to think about. Like, do I want to break that rule? Is it worth breaking that rule? Or does this chorus like deserve to really like go the fuck off and like, you know, come in really hard? And the best way you can do that is just to contrast it with going lower in the verse, if you're going to go high in the chorus. So I think that is like a formula rule that I think about breaking it. You know, I break it, but I think about it and I'm like, how do I make up for that? And how do I make it pop in a different way? Because I think a lyric can make something really stand out. And I think a different tone and I think a different, like belting something versus like whispering something and all of that stuff. You know, I think you can contrast it like that. But I love to just think about how I can make it a really interesting, entertaining journey. Kind of like…
It's texture, right? Because you'll hear… Like, you'll hear someone with a really nice voice who can hit all the notes.
Yes.
But there's just nothing special about it.
Yeah, and it's just not entertaining. And it's just like…
And you can't say it's bad.
You're no, like, not at all.
You hit the note. You're not flat.
Yeah.
But…
No, it's weird. There's like… I mean, there's technically so many singers who are so much better than me. But I feel like I make up for it and just… not being different and being proud of being different, like standing out. I think that's something that I always make up for with. And I'm learning the technical stuff about my voice now because I'm touring and I have to do it every single day.
Did you stop smoking?
Yeah, I stopped smoking. Oh my really? God, I used to like smoke like a chimney.
I mean,
like, I used to be so German.
It wasn't
German.
There. You used to crush a pack of smokes and then walk into the booth at CJ's house and sing your ass off.
Yeah.
But
no, totally. But I definitely like damaged my voice.
Yeah. And you can't sustain that.
Yeah, you cannot. You absolutely cannot. So yes, I quit smoking. I still like German ass me, like sometimes it's still like I really like whenever I'm drunk, I really like want to smoke a cigarette. I love it. I've always loved it.
That's just everyone, Kim.
Yeah. But it's been this last year of touring. I'm mad at myself if I don't hit a note. I'm mad at myself if I did something the night before that I was not in the condition to be at 100% at a show. Like, I get so pissed at myself and no one else does. Like, everybody's like, great show, and no one notices, but like, I get pissed at myself. So I had to, you know, take any, precaution and learn how to take care of myself and stuff like that so I can be on 100% every single night. And that's just something, I'd rather cancel a show than not. Like, I know that's not cool. And I've performed sick, all that stuff. Like, I don't do it unless I'm really, really sick. I don't cancel a show. But, you know, there's a part of me that feels like I'd rather not do a show and then
halfway
be less than the best I can be. Yeah.
I remember seeing like a documentary on Celine Dion.
Oh, shit. Queen.
Dude, she was literally in the bathroom because it had better acoustics of like some insane arena.
Yeah.
Warming up for 45 minutes. And yeah. I was like, this is why you're the greatest.
Yeah.
Like, it, just how much she takes care. But I'm interested to hear, you know, I've been listening. I'm such a fan of the NPR Tiny Desk concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I find? That for many of the artists who I fall in love with and their songs, when I hear it on Tiny Desk, because it's a stripped down acoustic version.
Yeah.
Is that I'll fall in love with it and I'll be like, I got to get the real version on iTunes, and I'll listen to the produced version and not like it, Kim.
Yeah, but like it.
Hate it.
Hate it.
Hate it.
Wow.
Like, and I'll be like, you screwed up this gorgeous, like,
oh yeah,
melody, and obviously the singer can sing it. They're singing it without any help here. But like they put too much razzle dazzle on it. Does that happen?
1,000,000%.
Really?
Easily, yeah. That's one of the, I think, as important as what you do is what you don't do. And that's something that a lot of people don't even consider. You know, it's just like, oh, but it's a crazy run, but it's a crazy note, but I'm hitting this insane note that's really hard to hit. Or like, it doesn't matter if it's too much, it's too much. And like for me, a lot of the times, like other people have to do this to me all the time because I'm like, no, I want to show I can do this run. And I'm really proud of that. I came up with it and shit like that. But I do realize like it's too much. The melody is too busy. There's too much going on already. And yeah, I think like just accepting when something is good and knowing when something is good and you don't have to add anything is a very particular gift and a very rare gift. And a lot of people who know who have it are really successful and have a huge value because they know the difference between this is cheesy and this is cool and clean and crisp. And I think somebody in my life who really knows Aaron, like he's like so good at that, that I feel like it's, yeah, I mean, I'm also like kind of a songwriting team at this point with Aaron, which is really, really cool because like we're very contrast to each other. I love doing a million harmonies and I love doing a million embellishments and stuff like that. And he's kind of more a simpler person. And I think together we've just kind of like found this middle ground that feels really good. So yeah. I definitely think what you don't do is as important as what you do. And to always think about that is like, it's always on my mind. You know, it's always on my mind. Like, if something feels great, like let it breathe. Like, don't try to don't add an extra harmony to it. It's not, you know, worth it. It doesn't hit as hard. Sometimes what hits hardest is just a single amazing vocal take that you really felt and nothing else. You know, sometimes that is so much more impressive and brave and to take that chance than to go and over perfect it, to leave something in that like has a rasp in it or has like a little crack in it or a break or just something that you felt can sometimes be way better than to go back in and, you know, engineer the shit out of it.
Yeah. It's funny. I get that from my wife who, you know, thank God she'll watch something I'm working on and she'll be like, take the sauce out of it. You know, like you're getting a little too greased up with this one, but it's great because like I trust her taste.
Yeah.
And I feel like she likes good shit. And so if she can slightly dial me up or down.
Yeah.
It's so helpful because I know I can get in the ballpark of good, but I really need help from my friends to really
get.
Yeah,
me too. I mean, I'm nothing without them. I feel it's one of the most fun parts for me as well to fight with my friends about like what I should do in a song. And most of my friends are songwriters just because I started that way and because I relate and because I know the struggle of being a songwriter and because I just feel like I, you know, belong in that world. So for me, it's just like a huge part of my relationships and my friendships is music. But I also feel like it's made me so much better to have people whose taste I really trust and who I, who have different opinions than mine and who like make me second guess things and make me, you know, do it again and make me try again. And it's hard to make yourself do that a lot of the times, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the final question, the thing that I ask everyone on the podcast.
Uh-huh.
What are your one or two Kim Petras commandments, truths that you have discovered that you would want to impress upon someone else?
Oh, my God.
Take your time.
Yeah.
Just so I'll buy you time. Listeners, Kim's wearing an incredible Star Wars hat.
That's right.
It's a fun streetwear collab with a brand I've never heard of because I'm probably not cool enough to wear it. But
that's not right. That's not true.
Thank you.
And you're a part of Star Wars. So
true.
That's why I put this on.
I appreciate it. I love that you're a fan of my work.
Yeah. Love your work in Star Wars. It's my favorite. Yesterday, I taped Jimmy Kimmel. It was my first like live performance on there. And I was really working up to it for a long time. And then when I got there, it was a lot of like, are you sure you really want to perform this? Or you just want to like record a track and then lip sync to it? And it's just like, that's just like the opposite of what I'd ever want to do. You know, just like the creative team like went wild and was like, no, we want to do all this stuff. And I was like, no, I'm doing a performance. Like I'm really singing. I always really sing and stuff like that. And people kind of looked at me like I was crazy. And they were like, oh, but why would you want that when it could be perfect? And I think it's just like to trust in yourself and stand up for yourself when stuff like that happens and trust in your vision and trust what you believe in is the key to my success. And the key to my success is not a different person. It's, you know, obviously I get help that I'm so appreciative for and I couldn't do it by myself. But it's in the stuff that I have the visions for that I need to be brave enough to believe in and to be crazy enough to believe in to do and to not be, happy with it until it's the way you like it. And I think that's the key to any kind of like success. You just need to find out what you really want to do and stick to it. And when people, think you're crazy for it, like you need to stand up for yourself. So I think that's something that I've like learned in general. It's just standing up for myself in like situations like that. And then in the end, everybody was like, wow, that was fucking amazing. You killed it. You know, everybody was so happy that it was a real performance and that's something that, you know, you can watch and it's real. There's something real in it. So yeah, sometimes people are just confused and you need to show them how to
show
do it.
Show them the way. I love it.
Yeah. So I guess that was something that happened yesterday. It was on my mind. And other than that, like, you know what? Just do your thing, bitch. Just rock it.
Rocket, bitch. Shout out Super Chris for bringing, he's basically brought the whole world together. Let's be honest.
Yeah, he did.
He's a connector.
I know. He's such a sweetie and a crackhead and I love him very dearly.
I love him.
And shout out fucking Super Chris. We love you.
That was it. That was Kim Petras. Wasn't that good? It was so good, right? So good. If you like the pod, feel free to throw us a review and give the pod 5 stars. It means a lot and it helps the pod to grow. And if you don't want to do it, I don't blame you. I don't do it much. But be better than me. Be better than your Uncle Josh, okay? I believe in you. It's possible. It is possible. Not easy, but possible. All right, guys. Love you. See you next week. Bye.